Everybody, and particularly the representatives of SASRIA, and also to the MPs. Let's start with this apology again on behalf of the powers that be in the NCOP. This has nothing to do with us humble committee chairs, but in fact, you know, there's a house may still be sitting while we are engaging, and this is something beyond our control. Secondly, for what it's worth, we have a chairperson's meeting at 6 p.m. I think, Sastra, you know, with the Constitutional Court decision on Friday, was it last week? And the IEC's follow-ups yesterday and their decisions and the fact that we're going ahead with the elections means that Parliament has to restructure its entire program for the next 7 weeks or so. So that means that all of us in some other form are involved in meetings we hadn't planned for this week. But be that as it may, we'll continue as long as we have to after the two-hour period, and I will join that meeting, the other meeting, when I have to. But for now, over to SASRIA. Are there any apologies in Nkululeko?
No apologies on our side, Chairperson.
Okay. Secondly, Mr. Njadu did say, although it might have changed since yesterday, that he might be on the road this afternoon and may not be able to connect with us. But apart from that, we have no apologies, have we? Is that right, Nkululeko? Nothing.
That's correct, Chairperson.
Good. Let's go ahead. Sasri, over to you. Please introduce yourselves and let's get going. Thank you. About 45 minutes at most, if that's okay by you.
Chairperson, you know, my name is Moss Nwasheng. I'm the Chairperson.
Yes, of course, I know you, Moss. You look older than I do.
For my sins, I'm the chairperson of SASRIA, and you know, on the call, I have the managing director of SASRIA, Mr. Cedric Masondo. I have the financial director, Bajabulile, and we will be responsible for taking you through as to what SASRIA has done in terms of the requirements that you've asked us to go through. And hopefully after the managing director has gone through the submission, I will then come back and conclude our submission to the committee. If you don't mind, Chairperson, I would like Cedric Masondo, our managing director, to give the presentation to the committee.
Yes, of course. Over to you, Mr. Masondo.
So good evening, Chair, and good evening to the honorable members. And thank you very much for the invitation. So I will be between myself and Pat Jablile, who is the financial director. We will be sharing with you the performance. We're also mindful of the time, Chair, but lastly at the end, we'll also talk about just the impact of the July riots and to the SASRIA and just the future. So Nkululeko will drive the slides for me, like if we can go to the next one, and Bajabulile will quickly run through the numbers. Bajabulile, over to you.
Thank you so much, Chair. And for this opportunity, I will take you through the past performance, the first quarter performance, and then what we're focusing in this financial year. Please move to the next slide. Thank you. The next slide. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, great. What you are seeing on this slide, you are seeing our gross written premiums for the last 5 years. You can see, if you look at this slide, that in 2017 we were just close to a 2 billion in terms of our gross written premium, which is our turnover. But now in the last financial year of March 2021, we finished very strongly at close to 3 billion, at 2.78 billion. Which was a growth of 15% compared to the last financial year of 2020. This growth is very aggressive considering the the difficulties that this economy experienced due to COVID. You can go to the next slide. Thank you very much. The last financial year, which is 2021, we saw a very, very healthy and strong profit for Sasria, which is just over 2 billion. And you can see how the last 4 years we've been performing as well in terms of our profitability, healthy, strong, and positive, except in the year of financial year 2019, where we experienced significant claims of close to 1.6 billion, which then led us to experience that loss, which you see there. But 2020, we came back, quickly recovered, and 2021 being a great year, which was what contributed in that year was we had that strong growth of turnover of over 15% year on year. And then we had close about 800 million worth of investment income, which we experienced from our investment portfolio, which contributed to our profitability. And then we also had very low, lower claims than usual. And the contributing factor there was the lockdown. During lockdown, there was low people movements and literally not much gatherings you'd see, which would generally lead to possible riots and all the special risk events that we might have to cover. So then we made that nice profit there. Thank you. To the next slide. Thank you very much. I think with Sasria, we pride ourselves at, or at least financial year 2021, we would pride ourselves with a balance sheet that is strong and healthy, with assets that are three times our liabilities. You know, and you can see our assets under management standing strong at 9.5 billion, and which is in terms of Prudential Authority, we would only be required to keep assets up to one times plus, but as Sasria, we kept as balance sheets that could withstand that any test that would be facing. So 9.5 billion is invested across. You see us, we had assets in money market, we had assets in equities, we had assets in bonds and also in cash, and some of the money we kept with the Reserve Bank. You can go to the next slide. This slide, the summary of this slide basically saying, if you look at the previous financial year, we achieved 73% of our KPIs in terms of our performance targets with the National Treasury, our shareholder. You can go to the next slide. Next slide. I'm going to talk about the first quarter performance of now the year at hand, financial year 2022, plus a month of July. So it will be April, May, June, and July. If you look at the first column, shows you our profitability at the financial year end, as I have just spoken into. And then in June is the next column. June, the story in June is basically saying we started well, we made profit, we experienced a positive investment income from the markets, and we managed to have an underwriting profit of 218 million. Okay, so in total, we made a profit, a net profit of 300 million. If now you cast your eye to the last column, it is a column that is starting to signify or to resemble problems. Under net underwriting results, you see us making a loss of 1.8 billion. This is solely as a result of the July riots that took place in many parts of KZN and in some parts of Gauteng, contributing to this this underwriting loss that we experienced. We absorbed about, at that point, only about 8 billion worth of claims had been registered within SASRA in this July 2021. and let me continue to the next slide for now. Thank you. And Mr. Masondo, the MD, will expand on the impact of the July riots in the slides that are coming. And then in our financial position, again, I talk about where we finished in the financial year end. A very strong balance sheet. You can see our assets at 10 billion and our liabilities at only 1.6 billion. And then the next column, again, we're still healthy until July happened, where we got hit by the riots. You might look and say, oh, but your assets are 17.1 versus your liabilities of 10.5. You are right, but it is the time here when we just started recording the claims coming through. Only 8 billion at that time, and also we factored at this juncture the recovery from our reinsurers of about close to 7 billion, which you see ramping up our total assets. However, the story will begin to change as I present the numbers and Mr. Masondo takes you through. Please, let's go to the next slide. I think in this slide is showing our KPIs as at the first quarter. I'm not going to dwell in it. Let's go to the next slide, please. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. So we are now focusing at March 2022. Where do we expect to finish after being hit by the July riots? What you will see happening here is our gross written premium climbing up to 3.4 billion, climbing upward from 2.7 billion last year in the financial year we just concluded, climbing up to 3.4 billion. There's two reasons or so to this. After the riots, what has happened is that there's a hunger or a larger uptake for the SASRIA product after the experience that the country has just gone through. And the other reason is that we will be looking at increasing our premiums. And although that won't be, we won't feel that positivity much in this financial year, you'll start to experience it mostly in the financial year of 2023. However, you do get some of the impact in the 3.4 billion. But more than anything, in our income statement this year of financial year 2022, you will see us recording net claims incurred of 13.8 billion. And then you will see us registering a historical loss of 12.1 billion. Please go to the next slide. I think all I want to say about this slide is what is the shape, is to talk briefly about the shape of our balance sheet. We are currently in a state of being insolvent because what has happened at this juncture is that our liabilities far exceed our liabilities far exceed our assets. However, we will experience a cash injection from National Treasury, which has already been promised, and the plans are in place to make sure that the 3.9 billion, which the minister has promised, there is a plan in place to see that it starts to come through between the months of November and January. And then also you will begin to see the reinsurance monies beginning to trickle in, which will assist our balance sheet and over and above that. But I won't talk about the reinsurance program, which is now in place to also deal with our insolvency status as a company at this juncture. So, and also in this financial year, what you will begin to see is that the claims which we expect to be registered at this juncture, which have been registered and maybe still not finalized, but as we stand, we're expecting them to be between 20 and 25 billion. So we expect at least 40% to be paid, Mr. Masondo can confirm later, to be paid in this financial year still. You can go to the next slide. I think, Mr. Masondo, this is for you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jabu. Thank you, Chair. And I think Jabu has painted a very different picture. In the past couple of years, we've been doing financially well, sustainable business, and continue to pay claims, strong balance sheet, and also paying dividend to the shareholder. I think for the past 10 years, it's only 1 year where we've missed paying dividend. So all the years we've been paying dividend, but it's also been paid responsibly. So it's not that we just paid dividend. So it was always paid because we've made profit, and the board and the company were quite prudent in reserving and preserving capital. But the riots of July was unexpected from us. Not the riots. I think we often ask whether were you not aware of things. We always modeled that there will be riots. In fact, we had even modeled, and it's required by the regulator that you must always prepare for the 1 in 200 event. So we always modeled the business that there might be riots happening all over the country simultaneously. I think the difference between this riots was just the extent. And just the extent is something that was big, and I think the committee and there will be some more introspection on really what happened. So the extent is the one that really destroyed our balance sheet. So if you look at the slides, 70% of the losses happened in KZN, around 30% in Gauteng. If you can move to the next slide, Kulego. And the next slide just shows so the expected riots is about 20 billion to 25 billion. I think we will reach 25 billion. So far we've recorded about 98% claims have been reported to us. So when you say reported, it means that the clients have reported claims via insurance companies, and we've received those claims. And we've also appointed loss adjusters on almost all of them. The loss adjusters, in some cases, they finished the reports. We started paying the interim payments. And in some cases, the work is still happening. So there's a big progress now. Then in July, where we're all in the mix and we're just overwhelmed by the number of claims. But I think now what we've also decided, Chair, is that because the claims are almost 10,000, claims below 1 million are being settled by our peers, insurance companies. So they are receiving those claims, processing and paying those claims on behalf of us. And that makes a huge difference operationally to us, because it relieves us from dealing with small claims and we have to focus on the big claims. So far, we have paid about 2.8 billion to date. And Jabu have said we expect the claims to about 20, 25 billion. Once we've finalized everything, our target is that all claims, medium-sized to big claims. I mean, when you say big claims, these are the claims below 80 million, 60 million. Claims below 20 million should be settled by October, and 80% of that. So that's our target. And these are the small SMEs to really medium-sized business, supermarkets, and these are businesses that don't require the reinstatement of building. So in some cases, the buildings were not totally damaged and it can be fixed. I've seen a couple of shops. It just needs fixtures and fittings and the buying of stock and just clean up. So those are the claims that we're focusing that we can settle as quickly as possible and so that we can restart the economy. And same with the 60 million claims. Some of the 60 million claims will be where there's reinstatement, but it's not major. And we're hoping those ones will be settled in 16 months. So the big challenge will be the big ones where there is a total damage. Today we met the team from Itala. So about four of their buildings were completely damaged. And in some cases, the structural damage means that the building needs to be rebuilt, demolition rebuilt completely. And if you look at Itala, it's industrial zone, those ones. So it's not just Itala that's affected, but there's also tenants and employment. And these employ thousands of people. So our focus is that one, is to work with the client and start rebuilding those. It's going to take 24 months to build those ones. So those ones will be quite challenging. And also bear in mind that we're now going to December and where the construction company normally closed. But that's our target, that we should deal with the small ones as quickly as possible. We are receiving money from the reinsurers. It also helps in terms of the cash flow. So we don't have a problem in paying the claims. And there's enough money to us and the reinsurers to pay the claim. And even before the 3.9 billion injection that is expected from National Trade. Move to the next slide. I think this two slides, the last two slides, and we just wanted to just give it the committee just where we are and what is the journey for us. The first phase, the first 3 months was just catching the wound and stopping the bleeding. So where we needed to deal with the claims, and that was the main thing. And also to make sure that we've got enough money to pay claims. I think that was quite critical for us because we didn't want to find ourselves in a situation where we stop claims because we just ran out of money. So, and part of that, of what we needed to do was to make sure that we liquidate some of all our investment and make sure that we sit on cash, but also to have an agreement with reinsurers so that they are able to, as we pay claims, to reimburse us and pay claims. But above that, we needed to focus on cash flow. So this is something we're doing, Jabu and her team, they're doing on a daily basis to see and cash flow. We do have cash flow for the next year, just to make sure that we have enough money. Whether we, in some cases, we don't factor the capital injection, we just look at it. So we will have a positive cash flow. And this does not even take into account the normal business, the premium that we're getting. And then the third part is to deal with solvency. The balance sheet that Jabu was talking about, the profitability, the money might still be in our account, but it was wiped out by the claims. If you just look at, there will be assets, but that asset will be matched by the outstanding claims. So the claims had a massive impact in just wiping out that balance sheet. We needed to rebuild that balance sheet. Part of rebuilding that balance sheet to make sure that we go back to the acceptable solvency was to look at the rate review, which will be, it's what do we do? Rate review and also to make sure that when we review the rate, we also take into account the rate that we're paying now for the reinsurance. And we finalized that change. And I'm glad to say that that's something that will be implemented soon. The SMEs and the personal lines, we have decided not to to increase the rate, but for the businesses to increase rate. And you can see big claims are small in terms of numbers, but in terms of the value, those are the ones that are contributing to the value of claim. We needed to look at the reinsurance because we wanted, when we go to National Treasurer, and demonstrate that the things that we've done ourselves and not just expect only money from National Treasurer. So the 3.9 billion capital injection would really help to boost our liquidity, but also play a long important role in the rebuilding of the balance sheet. Sasria needs to survive out of this mess, Chair. And part of the things, this was a crisis for us. We needed to go back and review and see what's happening. And Chair will talk about that in his closing. The next slide, which will be my last slide, Chair. The plan, the sustainability plan, deals with four pillars: claims settlement, and I think I've talked a lot about claims settlement, liquidity, and ensure fast full financial sustainability. It is our view that this will be the worst year in terms of losses, in terms of the claims, probably in the history of short term. I can't remember seeing any big loss like this in any short term insurance company. But it's also our view that this is a business that is important, that next year we'll be back to profitability. Not the same profit that we were making in the past, but will no longer be running a loss. So the loss will be only for this year, but next year we'll be back to profitability. Smaller profit, but I think it's important, symbolic for us to become profit again and become self-sustainable. So the cash injection that we'll be talking with the government, it's not the money just dropping, but it's the money rebuilding the business that will be profitable again and start contributing to the economy. Recapitalization is quite important in our plan. And of course, out of this, one of the things that we realized and we've had was that the number of small businesses that were uninsured and that are dependent on government grants for them to survive. And for us, we realized that we're not reaching those businesses. We have a very good product and a very affordable, so it's not about affordability, but we need to find a way of reaching those uninsured using different platforms. And of course, there are other things that we want to explore in the long run as a special risk insurer. And I think, Chair, this is it. And let me hand over to our Chair, Moss, and then conclude our presentation.
Thank you to the two of you. Chair?
Chair, I think that the team has covered where Sasria has come from, where it is. I just want to concentrate really on three issues here. One, the special risk insurance business that we were in, nobody else covers in the country. Not the insurance people, any other insurance company does that. We are the only company that covers this kind of risk that is in the market. Secondly, I think the riots or the unrest that happened over the last couple of weeks have pointed out a number of weaknesses in the insurance model that we have. Firstly, despite the fact that 60 to 70% of the economy constitutes SMEs, those SMEs we've just discovered that they're not covered. And by and large, the overall tax regime in the country, you'll find that some of them are not even registered for tax. I think this crisis opens up an opportunity to extend insurance as well as make sure that the tax regime covers the rest of the economy. The biggest problem that we face as Sasria at the moment is, as the FD said, is the fact that our liabilities as a result of the riots are going to be much higher than our capital. So we've approached the Department of Finance or National Treasury. They've already approved 3.9 billion as a capital injection, but there's still going to be a gap, a significant gap in that capital injection. And we're having a conversation with them to inject an additional capital into the business so that we remain within our prudential requirements that we have to at least be at 100% between our capital and our liabilities. So we're having that conversation, and we hope that that conversation will bear fruit and get us back to a level where we are prudentially adequately capitalized. But beyond that capital injection, I think Cedric has referred to a number of processes that we are undertaking ourselves. We're reviewing the rates that we're charging the various customers, and then we're going to be increasing some of the rates, but we'll definitely keep the rates of personal and small and mid-small enterprises constant. We will increase the rates over the next 2 to 3 years, and rate increases, we're not going to be able to do a significant increase in the rates in 1 year. We have to roll it out over a period so that we get the approvals from the Prudential Authority for those rate increases. We're going to have to expand the coverage and the mandate that Sasria has got beyond our traditional customers. We're looking at new businesses. We're looking at other risks, natural disaster risks that insurance are not covering, drought that the insurance industries are not covering at the moment. So we want to increase the pool and the coverage that we have of, in terms of in the economy, so that should another incident like this, where we have claims of 25 billion, we are able to cover that without having to rely on National Treasury. You know, National Treasury and the demand on the fiscus is just way too high. But I think that as Sasria, we're confident that with the capital injection that we're requiring, we would not be looking for another capital injection for a while, because I think we can write profitable business as we demonstrated over the years. And we've been paying dividend over the years. So we're now going back to the shareholder and making a call to recapitalize the business. And we hope that your members, chairperson, will continue to support our efforts to stabilize the business and to continue to support South Africa Incorporated in the work that we do. Thank you very much. We will.
Thank you, Chairperson. Over to members, please. Whose hands up? I see Dikeleri. Nobody else so far. Go ahead, Dikeleri. I see Dennis Ryder. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible, Chairperson?
Yeah, you are. Only when you're chairing, you're not audible.
Even now, I'm struggling to hear other people. I'm
teasing you. I hope you got 3 people lined up for tomorrow. Okay. Right. Whose name cannot be mentioned. I'm quite kind, Dikeleri. Sorry, we're just having our internal little...
I understand.
Okay.
No, it's better that he knows you. He understands.
By the way, weren't you in Treasury for a while?
Good afternoon, Chairperson.
Mark,
good afternoon, members.
I just want to check something. Weren't you, weren't you actually in Treasury for a while, or have I got that wrong?
No, I was Economic Advisor in the Presidency from 95 to 2000.
Okay, so we can blame you for the mess we're currently in, okay?
No, legacy. No. 2000 is a long time ago. I've left 2000 a long time ago.
Okay, sorry, Dick. Okay, over to you.
Good one, Chair. Good one. Chairperson, good afternoon, and members and the support staff, the team from SASRIA. I'm impressed by the first part of the presentation where you speak about your good performance in the last 2 years and also the first quarter of this year. But then you were hit by the riots or the unrest in July. And you'll understand that I'm happy that you have or Honorable Chairperson has made you to give us information that you are such a good economist, you have served in the presidency, so you will be able to assist us as lay people. Because if you were able to perform or to outdo yourself in the past 2 years and the first quarter of this year, during COVID for that matter, because all the reports that we are getting when we look at performances of all kinds of entities and government departments, the performances are bad, and the reason given is COVID. And you were able to perform very well irrespective of COVID. And one will wonder if what is it that you are doing that other entities or organizations can learn from you to part that strategy that you are using to can have a good performance under circumstances like COVID-19. But I also come back again and ask myself about July. If you are hit that hard in July, to an extent that you even talk about insolvency for July, the event that happened in July for 2 weeks in two provinces, mostly in KZN. What if it happened throughout the country? What was going to happen? I'm just asking myself, because you're talking about insolvency now, which means it's too bad. And also I'm asking myself, what if it took longer than 2 weeks? What would have happened? So my question again is, out of the good performance that you have had, the two, or above 2 billion ranks performance that you had, how did it help the organization? Is it not possible for you to can benefit from that performance and run yourself as a business? The reason I'm asking this is because of the issue of the injection that you are expecting from Treasury. I'm saying this because Treasury is under pressure because of the same reason that you're giving off July, but over and above the situation that you were able to outdo the COVID-19 situation. It did not affect you, but other departments and entities, they couldn't survive. There is still pressure. Money still needed from Treasury. So the injection that you expect from Treasury, who is it going to benefit? Because I'm checking these unrest, they've hit the semi-urban areas and the rural areas, so to say, or the township. So who is it that is going to benefit? Because I heard you saying something about this SMMEs not being insured and stuff. You can clarify me on the matter. Because I want to believe that your target or the injection that you expect from Treasury must benefit the masses, or it must benefit the previously disadvantaged. So I don't know how is this going to benefit them. But also, please, very important, is it not possible for you to be able to sustain yourself and not rely on Treasury or on government in case such cases happen? I'm saying this, lastly, Chairperson, because I don't want you to be like SAA and others, where we always have to rescue them. Thank you, Chair. I'll leave it at that for now.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I apologize if I have a halo. It's just I'm in the Marx building and the sun is setting behind us. So, yes, I want to appreciate the presentation. Thank you very much indeed. And I really want to disagree with some of Mrs. Mslangu's, stances, but we won't get into a debate on that. I think that the fact is that Sasria has performed extremely well over time and has never before required assistance from Treasury as far back as I can remember. In fact, they even turned down my claim in 2002 in order to protect their assets. I'm pulling your leg, but they did. But I mean, it's on a lighter note. So look, I think that Sasria has performed exceptionally well, and it's an entity that really has contributed over the years. The fact that what happened in July has happened is I think has little to do with Sasria, and I don't think anyone expected it. Sadly, that's what the security cluster says to us. No one expected it, so least of all Sasria. So I think that the fact that you are able to meet so many of your commitments on your own without coming with without coming for a bigger begging bowl is a good performance. I think 3.9 billion. I think it was again made, it was intimated in Bikaledi's inputs that injection is still inspected. It's still got to be processed, certainly through this committee. It's been promised, but perhaps you need to just acknowledge the fact that it's still got to go through the right processes, and we've got to find the money. So South Africa needs to find the money. But I think that the way that Sasria has responded to this, these incidents, and yes, Mr. Masondi, you're not allowed to call them riots in this committee, but the uprising in July, the way that Sasria has responded, I think has been commendable. So I just want to say well done so far. However, I do note that the... Sorry, I beg your pardon.
You disappeared for a while.
Ancestors.
Yeah, exactly. So let me put do not disturb on there. Good. Okay. So I think that So the questions that I have, sorry, and that really derailed my train of thought. But anyway, I'd like to know. So yes, I'm seeing that you've paid out a number of claims. We're already in September. I know historically and in terms of your performance, you previously aimed at a 25-day turnaround time. Now, I note that obviously there's a bigger volume that's come in now. It's going to take some time to deal with them. And I think no one expects a 25-day turnaround time. We see that you've already paid some out, which is, again, great. I noted your timelines where you said you're hoping to have all of these, the majority, I think 80% sorted out between 4 to 6 months. and the balance soon thereafter. How realistic are those timelines in terms of what you're projecting? You know, because I think people are wanting to get on with their business, they're wanting to rebuild, etc. And they need to know, you know, realistically, can they expect money next week? Or how many of them will get paid out only after 4 to 6 months? Great. So that's that question specifically. I then wanted to ask about the cost of underwriting. You know, this has been quite a big event and has materially, I presume, changed the risk profile. So what's happened to your cost of underwriting? I noted that you've spoken about the increased premiums going forward and the fact that you're going to phase those in. But and you don't want to do it too quickly, which again is commendable. But I think we also need to have a reality check and price in the cost of underwriting. So have you seen a lot of pressure from your underwriters to indicate that there's going to be bigger expenses there? And then the nasty one, the lousy question, and again, Ms. Mashlongu kind of pointed at it by saying what would have happened if this went on around the rest of the country. The question is, what if this happens again? You know, we've had threats again at the end of last month that there was going to be a second round. What happens next time Mr. Zuma goes to jail? What happens if this were to happen again? You know, is there potential that this is going to bring a much bigger burden to Treasury, and does the business model need to be reviewed? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Dennis, next please is Barney.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Also, thank you for the presentation. I think it's insightful. If I can take and go on where Honorable Ryder stopped, what's going to happen when you, a Chair, Mr. Karim, predicts that riots will flare up again, as you did the previous time? That's on a lighter note. I want to know from Sashra, you mentioned that you are looking at possible insurance for drought. If you can give us a little bit more information on that. I know it might be early days, but just a heads up, how would that be structured? And then you also said that you are looking at increased rates over a period. What percentage increase are you looking at? I think I've been covered on the rest. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Mr. Molesane, you want to say anything? I know your party wants to nationalize Sasria. Anything else? Simon? No. Okay. Else is around? Yeah,
it's me.
Yeah, Karen, Chair? Please. Yeah, do come in.
Now, Chair, it's on a lighter note. I just wanted to say, what if it happens again? If Honorable Dennis Ryder is arrested, goes to jail, other than Zuma.
Yeah, for insulting the chairperson in particular. Yeah, that's very likely. Okay, so all right, so we don't have anybody else. Does the researcher or an advisor want to ask anything? Yes, Fani?
So, Chair, just lastly, if I may, Sasha, you mentioned that there's going to be quite a shortfall in spite of the fact that National Treasury is looking at that 3.9 billion injection. What amount is the shortfall that you are looking at exactly? And what measures are in place, or what? How do you preempt to get hold of those funds? Thank you.
Well, while others are thinking of issues to raise, or might want to come in later, maybe I should start with the last point Fani raises, Sasria. I was going to ask a similar thing. You know, now, there may be sensitive negotiations there, I think we understand. It may not be appropriate, given the negotiations underway at the moment, to necessarily tell us at this stage how much it is you're hoping for. And that's fine. But in any case, once a decision is taken, it'll have to be public. It must be, in terms of the PFMA and other legislation. It'll have to come to the Appropriations Committee. So it will be public. But sometimes even government entities have to negotiate sensitively. the way we market and other sensitivities, I don't know. So if you don't want to say, it's fine. But if you can say, that would be good. So that was, in fact, my first question. The other that I didn't quite follow is you said small businesses are not insured and so on. Now, what happens if you aren't insured? Do you get no SASRIA payout, even though a social unrest has occurred and your small business has been destroyed? From what I remember, when Treasury appeared before us some 3 Tuesdays ago, I don't know if Esther, you remember, but I think anybody else, they said something like 89% of the businesses are small businesses that have suffered. But anyway, a very high percentage of small businesses. Thirdly, is there a maximum amount you pay? Now, I'm not very clear also, how do you... You know, there's so much to deal with here since the July social unrest that, you know, it's not clear to me. How do you do the assessments? I mean, like, when you get a request, you obviously, what do you do? Do you do independent evaluation of them? And if so, I mean, it's a gigantic task for you. How are you doing that? Then the other question that came up in my head was, well, some of this falls away because Dikeledi said similar things as I wanted to say. She discovered the question I was going to ask about, you know, if the social unrest had been more pervasive throughout the country and for a longer duration, it comes back to a related point, which is, like, you know, it's not your task alone, obviously. It's a responsibility of government and parliament, really. It's not just yours. Look, Mr. Fani Dutoy says that I said riots are going to occur. Well, as he well knows, I don't use that term. I know maybe in your sector, in Jordan sector, you use that term. Well, that's your parlance and you are an independent entity, and we can only raise these issues that you are right to. I don't like the word riots, although it's used by people within the majority party too. I just think it implies a mindless revolt of anarchic people, whereas in my view, and the view of many other people, I'm not alone, including in the party I come from, you know, we think that the incarceration of the former president is certainly one key aspect of the explanation. But a fundamental one is that the poor are desperately poor and the rich are getting richer. And 1% of this country owns, over 55% of the wealth, said an independent study recently. I think Sasria knows that. And 10% owns 85% of the wealth. It's unsustainable. No country can survive without huge unrest, whether racial or class or a combination of both. That's not like rocket science. So it's going to happen until we reduce the inequalities, all of which is not to say we're against those who have wealth and who have important roles to play in investment and growth and job creation. But yes, these social unrests are likely to happen. For me, it's astonishing it took so long. And in my view, it would happen anyway, whether it's 6 months now or 9 months from now or a year from now, exacerbated as it is, the inequalities by COVID. That's quite a sustainable argument. I'm not asking for Zasria to agree with it, nor am I indeed asking any other party to agree with it. I hope that some or other form of this will be the majority point of view, as I think it is in the party that I come from. But obviously, we're a broad church, as it were. So we will have differences on the terms we use and the way we understand it. But what I'm saying is reasonably sustainable. I'm prepared to argue with people in the forums if we have to do it. But right now, Sasria, the question really is, are you doing some broader analysis, as I think you are, on the likelihood of these unrest breaking out However, the reasons for it are defined. It can never be one person's imprisonment, surely. It's a multiplicity of reasons. The poor are not just sheep. Yes, people stole electronic goods and they were driving around in these seedy beds and so on. But many, many people came from informal settlements and the underclasses in the townships. And they are the most desperate, wretched poor. And they will not continue to fold their arms. And in fact, when you are paying out the so-called riots every now and then, that's not the super rich emerging elites who are doing it. That's the poor, as far as I know. That's what happened in Mzinduzi, where I come from. That's what I see elsewhere in the country. And that's what I hear from others who are living in those parts of the country. And that's what I know happens in the developing world. And it happened in the developed world 300 years ago. What's so special about South Africa? The difference here, colleagues, that I'm simply saying is that it's racially defined because of the nature of our polity and society. Never mind that there are increasing numbers of whites, Indians, and so-called coloreds also getting poor. It's largely racialized. So that's the form, but the underlying thing is a class and an income and a wealth inequality issue. There's nothing here that I'm saying that's so radical. I don't know why people get heated up. But you don't have to agree with me. That's my view, Saskia. Nor do you have to agree with me. All I'm saying is, I think members who are asking, as indeed Dix is, and Fanny himself, are you preparing for the possibility, however it happens, whether Dennis Ryder's arrest next time around for insulting the chairperson or former ANC president's incarceration is going to lead to one of many reasons for why these things happen. Are you doing some sort of projection analysis of the likelihood of this happening, the trends, and how you're going to prepare for them? And I come back to Dix's point. And you know, this is where you people have got the technical skills in the way most of us here do. That, and you know very well that Treasury is very hard-pressed, as Dix says. And while I agree with Dennis that you've done a very good job, it's also the case that the range and scope of activities you have to deal with, as much as you have lessons for other entities, are more limited than some other entities are. So yes, it's good you've done great work, but then you also have the capacity and skills to be able to project more for the future and plan more without wholly relying on Treasury, because as you know, as much as we do, it's so hard-pressed. Thank you.
Chairperson, you know, just to respond on to the few general kind of policy questions that members have raised, the reality is Sasria has a balance sheet of 9 billion, as you saw in our presentation, and we're facing 20 to 25 billion rands of claims. So the gap is what we need to be plugged from National Treasury. And we need that gap to be plugged precisely because if we are gonna revive this business to continue to provide the risk insurance that it provides to deal with social unrest impact on property, on government businesses and other businesses, we need to recapitalize this business. Without the recapitalization of this business, there is no reinsurance. There is no insurance for those kind of events in the country. And therefore, whatever happens will have to fall squarely on the shoulders of Parliament and National Treasury without an institution like Sasria. So it's quite important that Sasria is seen as a national asset, and therefore we need to recapitalize it and make sure that it can continue to provide insurance that is providing at the moment. So the gap, for members who are asking, the gap is between the 9 and the 25 billion rand that we have. The 3.9 is completely inadequate for the purposes and the reality that we face today. Secondly, the issue about the uninsured. My comment is that this is not a new phenomenon. A lot of South Africans, particularly African South Africans, are not insured. A lot of small and medium enterprises Mama Changu, who's selling fed cooks at the corner of a street, she is not insured. We're going to have to start to build models which requires us to insure anyone who's involved in economic activity who may be vulnerable to social unrest. That will require a significant change in terms of SASRIA's mandate and in terms of SASRIA's capitalization, because we can't write business that needs to be written in the form that we would like to write it unless we have very strong support from our shareholder and our balance sheet is geared to achieve that that responsibility. What would have happened if this was a nationwide social unrest? SASRIA will be bankrupt as it is at the moment. So will it be National Treasury, because to rebuild that the impact of such social unrest is the responsibility of government. It can't be the responsibility of SASRIA, and therefore that responsibility to rebuild the economy that has been impacted by social unrest of that significance will squarely fall onto your shoulders, members, and on the shoulders of this government. I think I'll leave the questions about costs, underwriting costs, what happens, the new business that we're looking to write around drought, and this is a new thinking. We haven't even tested this in the market at the moment, but we think that there are certain type of risks that private sector business insurers would not be willing to write, that somebody like SASRIA, as an insurer of last resort for any kind of social unrest and social disaster, or be it economic or environmental disaster, must consider writing that kind of insurance to make sure that the economy can be supported and people who are impacted by those kind of events have somewhere to go to be insured. I'll leave Cedric or my management colleagues to deal with the aspect on rate increases, the cost of underwriting and assessment. Cedric?
Yeah, thanks. You know, this matter about drought, I forgot to raise that, but I see where you're going. I really think you're right, actually. That's my view for now. I don't know enough, but you're right, actually. Who's going to cover that? And drought is very much on the agenda, yeah. And especially
nobody
with climate change.
Nobody covers it. And you know, we are as a rain scarce country.
Yeah. No, members, can we apply our mind to that? Obviously, people are going to shudder to think, how are you going to find the money to do that? But you're absolutely right. Until you raised it earlier, or one of your colleagues did, it hasn't struck me. I think, members, that's a very useful point Sasri is making, which you might have mull over. Yes, let's go on to your colleagues, please. We'll come back. There'll be a second round, colleagues from the committee.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So I just want to elaborate on the drought. The question was asked by the honourable member where we are. I mean, SASRIA, through South African Insurance Association, we've been working. I mean, this is a project that has been ongoing for almost 5 years. National Treasury has been involved, and Department of Agriculture has been involved. And the whole idea, what we want to do is to create a drought cover for farmers, both commercial but mainly emerging farmers. And we understand that there's not much appetite in the insurance industry to underwrite drought. And also, I mean, reinsurers are also pulling out of this thing. So that's something we hopefully we can restart and just implement eventually. So the whole idea is to make it more affordable for farmers, mainly emerging farmers who will struggle to get this type of insurance, but also to look for alternative type of insurance, not the traditional indemnity, but look for something else. So on this one. But that's a separate issue on this one. I see Dondo's question is answered up before I continue.
We see there's a hands up from the DG of National Treasury.
Yes. No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Good afternoon, honorable members. Good afternoon, Chair of the committee. No, I just wanted to, I've been following closely from Jabu's presentation, Chair, since the beginning. And I think for me, it's quite, and the questions, and the, I note the questions, but what I would maybe just put out as a comment just for consideration, Chair, by both the committee members and obviously Sasri, and we did have discussion. If we can come to a solution that covers the majority of businesses, including what Jabu is suggesting around increasing where possible the base and increasing the premiums, that for me in the short to medium term is a long-term solution, the solution, because a solution that does not need us as Treasury to put in more money beyond what we're putting is the right one. So because we all know that Sasri has been running a very good business and we've been getting good returns. So I think for now is just to reposition Sasri in terms of addressing and acknowledging that the challenges, it was just a demonstration that there could be more potential damage in future if such type of unrest or such type of situation present themselves. So a solution that talks to a non-fiscal injection solution for me, Chair, would be more ideal, but I think Sasria, and we'll engage with them further to be better placed to ensure that they increase just the size of their business in the short to medium term. As we know, we can see the impact of its balance sheet only next year when clearly we see some more increased subscriptions coming through, which will be in a solution. Because I know, in the last conversation with Sasria, the MD, Cedric, did indicate, Chair, that Sasria's insurance is very, very cheap. It's actually minute. You don't even notice it, even in your own car insurance that you have with any of these insurance companies. Sasria is almost nothing. So by increasing it by almost 100% will not change the make a huge difference in the subscriptions. So I thought I would leave it at that and just make that input for now. Thank you.
Sorry, that's fine. But you'll see that the members are not rushing in a populist way and say, yes, Treasury must just come. Dick's made a passion. Ms. Mashlangu started by saying, is there no other way apart from pressing?
And that's pressure? Welcome, Chair.
Oh, yeah. Welcome. Now that does worry me. Okay. So anyway,
are we looking for a situation where, Chair, we're going to be going to Treasury every year? This is a special environment. No. We want to recapitalize the business, and this business will only be sustainable going forward if it becomes a 100 billion rand business, not a 9 billion rand business. And that's the focus that as a team and my team, we're really focusing on how do we increase this business. Sastria, some of the insurance people, 45 rands a year. It's nothing.
You're right. Yeah. Although I can't resist saying this, DG. I just can't, since you interjected, right? So why can't I? Soon Dennis will say, why can't I? I can't resist. So you see, Diggy, maybe it's simpler just to give people a BIG, right? So they're less inclined to sort of have these social
unrest. Not now, not today.
Okay, sorry, shall we go to the MD, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So I think the issue of capital has been well talked about it. And there was a question about the cost of underwriting. And I think, of course, part of what the DG is talking about is that we also need to get our own reinsurance, not just rely on credit. And part of what we've been doing, and also maybe to be even bigger now, is to increase the reinsurance so that. Thank you. So part of it is just to increase the reinsurance.
Second, my brother. It's not your fault, obviously, but you sort of like you're phasing out and phasing in again. I don't know if you want to do something. I'm not an ICT person. Koleleko, what can he do? He's got his video off anyway. So let's see. Can you just say something? Let's see if we can pick you up completely.
Yeah, I'm closer to the screen. Is it better or
It's fine now. Okay, thank you.
Apologies to the members. So of course, we had to increase the reinsurance, and the reinsurance cost will be pushed up because we're buying more reinsurance. And of course, the cost of reinsurance is higher, and that will be reflected on the price. And so at this stage, we're still talking with the FSCA in terms of the pricing, so we can't release the details of how much it will cost. But we definitely need to increase the pricing to reflect the risk. And there was a question about, I mean, the SMEs, can buy SAGA. The issue is not just, it's not a product, but it's just more about the accessibility. And the chair of our board have said, most people don't buy insurance at all. If you don't buy insurance, it's very difficult then to add SAGA. And that's something we need to do just to expand this one so that we increase the pool in terms of insurance. The question was about what do we, in terms of limits. So we've got two products, Chair. So in fact, we cover up to 500 million per client. We call it per coupon, but up to 500 million. So you can buy anything that includes material and also business interruption, and in total up to 500 million a year. But for big corporate accounts, in addition to that, they also buy a 1 billion coupon. So that's also a way of us on managing and limiting the cost for us, because otherwise, if it was unlimited, it becomes unsustainable for us. In terms of the claims, the targets that the Honorable Member have asked, it's quite an ambitious target, and we've put it there, and we hope we're gonna be able to meet those targets. And in our case, we've increased the staff. We also now allow insurance companies to give the claims. It's quite a tough toll, but we're working towards achieving that. Because if we can achieve that target, we would have done a lot in terms of putting the money back to the economy and help the economy to rebuild the economy. And in the meantime, we also want to start building those malls and those areas that were destroyed. So we're doing that concurrently. Of course, the claims, these are not grants, these are claims. We process them in a normal way, and we need to do that so that we protect the clients, we protect the purse of national treasure, and we really eliminate fraudulent claims. So we'll require the normal details. We want to prove that there was cover, we want to prove that premium was paid. We also want to make sure that the damage that said it was damaged is the right damage. So we process it in a normal way, and we want to be quickly as possible to do that. And of course, the rates, and I've talked about the rates, that we will have to review the rates. We're hoping to implement the rate increase in January. So there was a question from Honorable Member Ms. Masang about what did we do to survive COVID. I think for us, there were a couple of things that we did. Firstly, was to look at our clients. I mean, COVID affected our clients of course, if our clients are affected, then it will affect. We started talking to our clients, and we entered into agreement with them that they can pay us in different terms. We offer them different terms, and that really helped. And in some cases, we were able to wait for a couple of months before we received the premium. That really helps, especially for the second quarter of last year, where the clients were really distressed and they didn't have money. But when the economy started opening up, and they were able to pay their claim, to pay their premium. So we did a lot of work. We did a lot of campaign just to promote SAGA, and of course overall, in any organization, the stability. It's quite important, the stability at the board level, the stability at the management. So in the last couple of years, we've not lost people. We've not had any high staff turnover, especially at the executive level, we've not had people resigning. So that stability will really help, and I hope it will continue even in the future to be like that, where there's stability at the board and also at the executive level. Thank you, Chair. I hope I've answered all questions. If I've missed question, I apologize. I'm happy to answer that question.
All right. Are the members that feel the questions that they asked are not answered? Who's coming in?
Yeah.
I heard somebody.
Yeah, through you, Chair, this is Bacha Bulile, Finance Director of SASRIA. There was a question by Ms. Mashangu asking, Honorable Member Mashangu asking, who will benefit from the 3.9 billion? I think we didn't answer that question most directly. I think I'm going to answer it by saying this 3.9 billion is being injected into SASRIA to ensure SASRIA is sustainable, to ensure that SASRIA is complying with all its prudential authority requirements of capital, of having sufficient capital in trading and in making sure there's solvency in the company. And the company is committed to meet all its obligations as far as its policyholders are concerned. Every valid and credible policyholder at SASRIA that has a valid claim will benefit from this capital injection, which is promised by Treasury, which its aim is to ensure sustainability, solvency, and the meeting of SASRIA's license conditions in order to continue to trade. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, members, do you want to follow up any question that hasn't been fully answered, or do you want a further new question or whatever? Anybody wants to come in? I see Dennis again. Go ahead, please.
Thanks very much, Chair. I'm going to turn off the video if you don't mind. Okay, so if the first thing, I've actually put the question in the chat, and I know that there was a 70-30 split in the claims between KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. When I was on oversight, the damage in KwaZulu-Natal seemed to far outstrip that in Gauteng, and I'm actually surprised. I actually expected a more of an 80-20 split. And my question, therefore, is do we just see a higher level of penetration by SASRIA into the market in Gauteng? Or is that a reasonable reflection of the damage that was caused? That's the first question. Chair, and then the second question really relates to some of the inputs. And it seems like every meeting that we have a Masondo addressing us, but that's on a lighter note. But I think that the question I have is really, you know, there's an indication the 3.9 billion that has been preemptively promised by the minister, there was an indication that might not be enough. And the presentation obviously gives the figures, but I have a very short attention span. So if I can get an explicit comment about what will SASRIA be hoping for in the new year appropriation in order to make sure that they are fully recapitalized or that they're able to continue operating in a liquid state. Thank you, Chair.
Is there anybody else in Kululeko that wants to follow up? Dennis?
No, Chairperson.
I wanted to ask a similar question. Now, I got an E for maths and matric, right? But if I'm correct, let's see if that's am I right. So you know, you've got, say, crudely 9 billion. The Treasury is giving you almost 4 billion, that's 13. And then you're expecting to pay out between 25 and maybe 30 billion, right? So in other words, you have a shortfall about 12 billion, would I be right, minimum? So that's what is at stake here, at the very least. Am I correct? It's the same question Dennis is asking. What is the shortfall, more or less 12 billion, am I right?
Yeah, Chair, it's not 12 billion because there is also money that needs to be recovered from reinsurers. That will be about... So reinsurers will give us about just under 9 billion all in all. And Chair, I think I've said the final number of what we'll require from National Treasury or what we'll propose will depend on other alternatives, buy more insurance and so on. So I would rather have that discussion first with the National Treasury team.
Yes.
And then we present, and I'm sure it will come back to this committee.
Yeah, it will indeed. Okay. All right.
Just to say that, you know, the first
you know, we were expecting claims of 15 billion. And as claims came through, we said 20. So until we get to the end of the claims, we will not be sure in terms of giving you a definite number.
Yes.
But the number is between 6 and 10. But until such time that we have a full view of all of this and what other steps we were undertaking from a reinsurance point of view to try and limit access to treasury funds, we will not be in a position to give you a definitive number. So we're working through with our treasury colleagues to make sure that we arrive at a number that we'll bring back to this committee and other parliamentary processes for approval.
Right. In that case, there
was a question from the honourable member, and I didn't answer. I think your 80-20%. It's probably correct. These were the numbers when we started initially. We're looking at the split. So, as we've seen, the damage is more in case that, and even from SASRIA's point of view, not just in terms of material damage. So, I will agree with your 80-20% split.
I don't see any other hands up, and there's no need to persist with this meeting beyond the time that we need. From my side, the only thing I wanted to say was, if I understand it correctly, and the DG might want to say something if he feels up to it, the cost of the destruction is somewhere at least around 50 billion and more. The payouts are meant to be something between 25 billion. Or thereabout. Does this mean, or have I got it wrong, that at least half the people who lost out will not get anything back, firstly? Secondly, now, everybody that's been commenting on this area has been saying that there isn't like a culture of insuring amongst small businesses, particularly African small businesses, understandably why. So again, disproportionately, it's presumed that it's African businesses, township economies probably, but small businesses, which is something we've been desperate to revitalize and build. And we've made a little headway, nowhere near what we should, but even that's gone now substantially back, right? So one of the things you raised, Moss, was, you know, government, parliament needs to apply its mind to how everybody gets insured, even the little go-go doing, Fed Cook or whatever. Now, that's a horrendously challenging task, given the difficulties we're having in the country and how we are slowly edging towards, with all the ups and downs, towards some sort of broader social security system. But at least in principle, it seems to me for now, tentatively, that's correct. How and when it can be done, I don't know. But that's correct. Nobody should bear the cost of these unrests, which are beyond their control and against their prevailing interests, because their businesses go down, simply because they don't have the capacity to insure themselves. It's just wrong, obviously. And the social unrest that occur ultimately are the responsibility of the state and a governing party in any democracy. If such social unrest occur, ultimately who's held responsible if not a governing party? So it's us as the ANC. Now, why should Mrs. Ndlovu, who like ekes out a mere little few pennies at the end of a long day, have to bear consequences, you know, even if her infrastructure costs are so minimal? I mean, if there's social unrest, where is she going to sell a pet book and so on? So, you know, this is correct in principle. I don't know, DG, what is going on, because I see the green paper's now been withdrawn, and there are obviously sensitive discussions at the highest levels of government and the majority party. So I know there's discussion going on, but, you know, this is yet another issue that any, like, sensitive, humane social democracy needs to consider. And I know it's like sounding like very populist and idealistic right now. I'm merely saying, as a principle, what Sastria is saying makes sense, both about drought and about, you know, the insuring the uninsurable or uninsured. But I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight. No, not in these circumstances of the low growth rates we have and the huge other tasks we have to bear through the treasury work. I'm just saying that in principle, it does seem a fair thing to say. That's all I can say, Mark. And Sastria, I agree with you in principle. I don't know how doable it is and when, but hopefully time will come when we can do such things. Okay, is there anybody else who wants to draw the meeting to a close? I don't see any other hands up. No?
No, Chair, right. No hands.
Okay, in that case, Sastria, do you want to say anything before we close? DG, do you want to say anything before we close? I'll ask you to respond to my specific question. It's unfair to you. Is there anything you want to say, Sastria?
No. On a lighter note, Chair, on a lighter note, the financial director of, and the MD and the DG of the Treasury come from Devon Westville University. I'm just telling the university. That's so that you know. That's what you know.
Okay. And so does the chairperson. Although you got kicked out of
the No, the chairperson comes from UND.
No. I thought it was UND, but my... No. My university studies were rudely interrupted, boss, by the social unrest called riots then by the older parties, the year of 1976. But anyway, boss, nice to see you again. I've forgotten. I heard you were part of Sastria. I forgot about it until I saw you. Anyway, nice to see you.
Thank you to you and your members for taking the time to come and, you know, listen to us and to ask us the questions that they've asked us. We remain committed in making sure that we can revive the organization that you've made us responsible for, but we just want to say thank you very much for the opportunity.
No, thank you. And in your hands and the hands of your very competent colleagues, I have no doubt, Treasury, that you've appointed very good people there. Not because I happen to know Moss, well, that too, but, you know, more importantly, is that he's on his own just very good. He doesn't have to be known as the chairperson for anybody. So, DG, very good appointment. I want to say it for once, but I'm not. Okay. Thank you very much.
International. Keep it
bye-bye.
Up.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And thanks
bye-bye.
For being here, DG. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.